years after NBC first showed it on TV?
Well, it's really amazing to me because I still get very moved. You know, not because it's my story, but because it is a story that not very many people know about in this country. And when they do see it and they see the humanity of it, you know, I feel, whenever I see it, I think, oh, this film has got to be seen. You know, not because it's my story or my film, but it's a very powerful story because it's about a family.
So now that the museum has gone, you know, moved heaven and earth to get it out on DVD, Universal held it for so long off the market, what kind of different reactions do you hear from audiences now who see it in 2013 as opposed to what you heard back in 1976?
Oh, that's amazing. That's a big question. But first of all, I'd like to say that it wasn't too long ago that Universal Studios, you know, apparently they didn't even know they had the film, that it was someplace down in the tombs below. And it wasn't until Governor, you know, he wasn't the governor, but he was running for governor, Bustamante, and Carol Hyashino was in Sacramento, and they got this idea, oh, we must show Farewell to Manzanar and maybe get these films to every school in the state of California. So Universal Studios realized that they had this film in their catacombs. So they brought it out again, and they produced it. 10,000 of the copies of the films, and it was distributed to 10,000 schools and libraries throughout the United States.
Right, on VHS.
On VHS, yes.
On a special program. So the DVD was a special Japanese-American National Museum
project.
Yes,
that came later, of course.
Yeah.
As technology improves and changes, you know, unfortunately, the film story doesn't, but, you know, it does make it more available to everybody.
So let me, a technical note, your necklace is hitting the microphone. That's the noise we're hearing there. So just move it to the side there. There you go. So let me stick with the Universal Studios idea. There you go. That's much better.
Okay.
Thank you. You know, I noticed that in the difference between the book and the movie, in the book, there's a lot more Japanese-American vernacular. You know, the use of the term Issei, Nisei, Bombay, Bakatare, you know. But in the movie, there is... I just noticed one time that the English-speaking characters use a Japanese word, and that was Inu. And that was very carefully defined for the audience. Mom, what does Inu mean? You know, because...
Mm-hmm.
So in doing the screenplay with John and Jim, how did some of the Japanese-American language kind of fall away from the screenplay?
Oh, wow. That's a very, very good question, because we realized that Farewell to Manzanar would be the first film, a narrative film, to be shown to the population, I mean, you know, more than 35,000 people, and that it would be the first time that many people would have heard about the internment camps. And also, you know, there are a lot of, at the time, there are a lot of kind of superstitions or stupidities about Japanese-American history here. For instance, when John Cordy went to Universal Studios and to tell him about the script and so forth, the person who was in charge of that did not know, one, about Japanese Americans, and he said, you know, how can we get Toshiro Mifune? I mean, he doesn't speak English. I mean, that's the kind of mentality that we had. So we knew that whatever, anything that we could write up for the screenplay had to be pretty elementary in terms of the history of Japanese Americans in this country, and to, so that, you know, we not have Japanese spoken very much, because people, you know, wouldn't understand it, and it could turn them off. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take questions from the audience. So, Helen, is there a microphone that people are supposed to... There. Okay, Helen over here has one microphone. So I'm going to ask one more question about Universal. And that is... another obvious difference between the book and the movie is, did you have a brother who had a white Hagrid Jean girlfriend?
No. Oh, my goodness, no. There's big difference between the book and the screenplay, because we realized that this may be the first and only story. So we had to get a lot of what happened to Japanese Americans. And one, of course, is the 442nd. Well, in my family, there was no, my brother was in the, you know, in the tank division of, you know, whatever it was, and he was in the MIS. So this story was not about that. It was, we needed to tell the story of someone, you know, being lost,
right,
killed in action. And so so we had to change,
uh-huh,
you know, a lot, you know, to translate the film, I mean, the book,
yeah,
to a film. So we had to say, what is it that we need to educate the people about? And then there are some rules about films. I mean, we can't have 10 people in the family. That's too many characters. So we had to cut it down. And of course, even 5 was too many. But still, that's, we had to, you know, think about those kind of odd facts.
This is interesting because I know that the movie was sold or pitched as kind of the story of one person, one little
family.
Girl, one,
yeah,
family from her perspective, and yet there was still the need, the desire to embrace the entire camp story or the entire Japanese American experience, and so that the movie did, as you say, try and represent more than your family.
Yeah, because there was that one, you know, not fear, but, you know, apprehension that this may be the only film for a long time. So what are the really important things that need to come out? And, of course, loyalty oath and about the 442nd, about, you know, the boys, you know, I didn't lose a brother in the war, but, you know, families did. And you had to confine it to a smaller family.
This is great. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what happens, you know, when you translate a book into a film. It gets changed because of, you know, reasons like that you want to maybe educate more, or that you want to put in something that, you know, was not in the book.
Were there any ideas that John had? Were there any ideas that John Cordy had that maybe you said no to, or you put your foot down?
Nothing no to. John was, he was an incredible, and he still is. He's, you know, he's still making films. But the interesting story is that how John, quote, got the film, I mean, got the book, was that he had just won about 11 Emmys for the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman. I mean, it was just a breakthrough, you know, about a black woman. So my husband and I saw, and I said, oh, John Cordy has got to make this film. So we sent the book immediately to him. And my husband and I were out, and my son was home. We came back home, for we'd been out for dinner, and we said, well, did we get any calls? And he said, yes. He said, but he called, but he said you would know who he was. And I said, what makes you think that? And he just said that he read the book and that you would know who he was, what he was calling for. And of course we did. It was John Cordy.
Wonderful. I didn't know, you realized you sought him out. I thought NBC hooked you up.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, yeah, we sought him out, but at the same time, he was seeking us out.
Because, oh, really?
He said, oh, he got 12 copies of Farewell to Manhunt,
really?
From friends. People said, hey, you got to do this film.
Uh-huh. Terrific. Wonderful. So, any Helen, any questions from the audience? Yes. Helen, where are you?
Hello, I'm Setsuno Kuchi. I'm a docent at Janum right now. And I have a kind of a dumb question, maybe a smarter question. The first question, why was Toyo Miyatake's name changed in the movie?
Why was Toyo Miyatake's
name changed in the movie?
His name changed in the movie?
Toyo Miyatake's name was changed as any hero. Pat Morita's character.
Everybody's name was changed. We changed the names. Yeah, because, you know, at the time, Toyo wasn't alive either. You know, so where were we going to get, you know, the permission?
Well, his son was alive, right?
Okay. Archie, no. I definitely was in touch with Archie, but no, we didn't use names. We didn't use real names of anybody except the family, because, you know, that would be my responsibility.
I see.
But even the names of the project director, everybody.
Ralph Merritt.
Even your name.
Frank. I played Fred Tayama from Los Angeles. Right. Joe Kurihara was Joe Takahashi.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Ueno became mm-hmm. Sam Fukimoto.
Right, so we kind of changed, but then, you know, it wasn't like, you know, people say, oh, that's Harry Ueno.
Yeah.
We knew it was.
Right.
Okay.
And
right.
So I think the same thing was Zenihiro. They knew it was Toyo Miyatake.
Okay, my other question is, I noticed there was subtitles, Japanese subtitles on this. Has this been shown in Japan, and what has been the reaction of this movie?
You know, I thought the same thing. See, excuse me, I don't own this film. Universal Studios owns the films. So John Cordy and myself, or Frank, who's in the film, do not own the film. So I don't know if it's, you know, it's being shown right now. But obviously it is, because it's written in, because it has the subtitles in Japanese. I think at one time, very early on in the game, it was shown in Japan. In fact, it was, because NHK came to interview me. But that was like 30 years ago. But they may be showing it again today. And, of course, Universal Studios may have made a deal with somebody in Japan, because obviously it's subtitled in Japanese. But see, I'm not in the loop there anymore about that, you know, where it's being shown.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we actually have 5 minutes before they want Jeannie to go sign DVDs in the lobby. So Stan, over here.
Hello. Ah. Okay. So hi, Stan Shikuma. I have a comment and a question. One is, I really enjoyed the film, particularly the scene where Mako's on the truck going by, because I'm standing right next to him.
Oh, you were? Were you there too?
Yeah, I was extra at
that. Oh, excellent.
So I'm also in where everyone gets shot, except you can't see me.
The riot scene.
But the question is, I noticed some of the scenes were shot at Tule Lake, and I'm wondering, did you actually create the barracks? I mean, did you rebuild those? Or?
No, the reason why it was shown at Tule Lake is they still had a building that we could tar paper over to make it look like camp, and whereas Manzanar was just totally bleak, and it would have been too close to Hollywood also to film in Manzanar. So John really wanted to be as far away as possible, and Tule Lake worked out fine. That's why we were in Tule Lake.
Can you tell us again the bit about John not wanting to shoot the movie in Los Angeles, in Hollywood?
No, because of the unions and all that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. But also, you mentioned studio executives. He didn't want them hovering around?
Oh, No. Oh. John didn't want to be, you know, close to the Universal Studio. They gave him the okay, and he said, bye, and he wanted to do the film. But he didn't want them hovering, you know, to see, hey, what you doing, you know, and so forth. No. In fact, Universal Studios were very, very proud after this film made it, you know, and, you know, they're proud today of it. So, but in the beginning, there, you know, people, this was such a new thing. People were afraid. When John took the treatment or the idea of the screenplay, we went to Hollywood and we went to Universal Studios and this production guy. I mean, he wasn't a production guy, we realize now. He was, you know, down on the ladder a bit. And he took the screenplay and he threw it on the ground. He threw it on the ground. And my husband and I had never been to Hollywood before that. And we said, ooh, what's this? And, you know, John just stood his ground. And this I mean, he was just doing an act, obviously, and he says, how the hell are we going to do this film? You know, where are we going to get Japanese actors? I mean, that's how we acted. So I was thinking to myself, you know, they're crazy here. We better make the film our way.
A lot of Japanese-American talent was used. Hiro Narita was a photographer. Kinoshita was the production designer. Paul Chihara did the music.
Oh, yeah, Paul Chihara. Wasn't that music beautiful? Every time I see it, that power of that film comes a lot from that incredible music by Paul Chihara.
Whose idea was it to use all the Japanese-American talent behind the camera?
John Cordy.
Okay.
He tried to get everybody, you know, Japanese that he could. He's an incredible director.
I have a two-pronged question. First of all, I'd like to know what the reaction was from the teachers and the kids when they saw the film. And then secondarily, since most teachers in the public use guides on classifications of films, is this considered a docudrama? Is it fiction? How do they put it into their catalogs so that the people who need it for, let's say, No Child Left Behind curriculum would know what it is?
I think they say this is a true story. They absolutely say it's a true story, like a docudrama. And I mean, I know because I speak so much to the schools, and that authenticity, I think, makes it more powerful for the kids, you know, to know that this happened, and this happened to a family, and these are the things that, you know, did happen. Yes, I think it's very important that they say it's, you know, a docudrama, or that it's true.
So it's classified as nonfiction?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, they call it my husband used to like to call it a fictionalized memoir.
Good, yeah, that's about right.
Meaning that, you know, we just didn't go into every, you know, nuance of it just being so true. And, of course, we did have to change things for the film.
Right,
you know,
right.
From a family of 10 to a smaller family.
So you were fortunate because you were married to John Huston.
Jim Huston,
who was already a recognized Western writer. American novelist.
Yes.
And poet.
Yes, but he wasn't a film writer. We ventured on that together for the first time. But he, you know, but I mean, we love doing it.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, people make money doing films. Yes. His field was definitely literature, taught writing, and so forth.
That's right.
Hi, Jeannie. It's Elisa from Manzanar. I'm curious why the film was not done, why it was not filmed at Manzanar, since the exterior scenes are Tule Lake.
Well,
we couldn't. For one, Manzanar at the time, I mean, it was just totally unavailable. It was too close to Los Angeles area. This is what John's feelings were. And whereas Tule Lake was, it just was much easier to, you know, build the sets there and to be out where it was, you know, not so close to the city. Mm-hmm. That's why. And actually when we did this film, which is 38 years ago, they didn't have the park. It wasn't developed, and nothing was there at Manzanar.
I thought the opening and closing scenes at Manzanar were...
Well, they just had that front thing, but there was not the development that they
had. No, but wasn't that shot at Manzanar?
Also the gardens, and some shots. We did some shots at Manzanar.
At Manzanar. Well, what was left of it in 75? Mm-hmm. Helen, yes.
Hello. I'd like to know, when you visit schools, what kind of questions do the children ask?
Well, they ask, usually, you know, it depends on what level. I mean, but younger people ask, oh, what happened to your, could you take dogs in, and so forth, things like that, and about the food. And I have to steer them more toward the constitutional issues, you know, in a more limited way for the younger kids. But the older kids, you know, in high school, you know, up in seniors, college, their questions are a little bit more sophisticated. you know. And they always, and of course, they always ask, you know, how I feel about this country. You know,
how do you feel about this country?
What?
How do you feel about this country?
Well, I say this, well, it's my country. I was born here. But I say, you know, this is, we have to remember that, you know, we had a government that apologized and also recompensed the people. In other words, they recognized that it was wrong, it was a violation of the Constitution, and then, of course, go into why the Constitution is important, because we're probably about the only country, democratic country in the world that is so diverse, that is governed by a constitution. And so that's why it is so important that we see this constitution as the top law of the land. And so when we violate it against anybody, we have to rectify it. And, you know, this country is so diverse, especially the state of California, that, you know, just putting that out there, I said, this could be any group. If it happens to one group, it could happen to another. And if they can identify with that, then they see the bigger picture. I'd like to put it out as a positive that we are an ideal. You know, this is a, you know, we are an ideal because democracy is an ideal. And here we are, so many different peoples and races and so forth, and trying to get along together. And so when we have something happen, like 9/11, Pearl Harbor and so forth, how do we react? So now we've had some lessons, so what have we learned from these lessons?
My name is Saburo Masada from Fresno. I have a good friend who keeps arguing with me that since most of the incarcerees were underage, that and there were many children, so when as adults they talk about the camps, that he feels that they really don't know what they're talking about because they were only little children. But my argument with him is that like using a metaphor of incest, no matter how little their children are, they are traumatized. But he argues with me that that's not true. So I always use your story of when we asked you why you wrote your book and you mentioned about your nephew and you said nobody had ever asked you how you felt. Mm-hmm. Are you responding as an adult? Or are you going back to your childhood and the trauma you felt at that time?
Well, maybe I can explain this by saying how this book came about, and I think it would explain exactly what you are asking. Was that my nephew came over one day to Santa Cruz, and he was a student at Berkeley, and he for the first time had heard outside of the family the word Manzanar. And he knew he was born there. So he came over and he says, Auntie, he says, you know, what can you tell me about Manzanar? I was born there and I don't know anything about it. And I said, oh, I said, well, this is my oldest sister's son. And I said, well, don't your parents tell you about it, talk to you? He said, no, whenever I ask them, it's like, you know, there's some skeleton in the closet and I shouldn't be asking them that question. So I said, oh, that's odd. I said, sure, I'll tell you about Manzanar. And so I then began telling him about the dust storms, the hot weather, the lousy food, the schools, you know, in this real, you know, kind of unemotional way. And so my nephew, you know, this is after the 60s, right? And he looks at me, says, Auntie, you know, you're talking about being in a prison as if it was nothing. How did you feel about that? No one had ever asked me how I felt about that experience. And obviously I wasn't ready to really feel anyway, but I did. I allowed myself to feel, and I became hysterical. I started crying, and I couldn't tell, you know, I couldn't talk to him, and I mean, I didn't know what was happening. And so I said, you know, well, look, I can't tell you about this, but I will write something for you, just for the family. So I tried to write myself, and I would go out to the beach and write, and I'd be in tears all the time. So I came back home, you know, would come back from the beach home, and my husband, who was teaching writing at UC Santa Cruz, and I said, you know, I'm having real trouble writing this memoir. And he says, what memoir? And I had been married to my husband for 14 years. I knew him 6 years before that. And I had never told him about Manzanar. He knew of some camp in my background, but he didn't know what kind of camp it was. And so for the first time, I was emotionally honest with my husband after all these 20 years. And he said, this is not a story just for your family. He said, this is a story that everybody in America should know about. Let me help you get it out. Wonderful. So that's how that began.
And the rest is history. All right. I think Jeannie will be available to answer more questions out in the lobby. I think our time is up. So I'm going to ask Jeannie to sign my DVD right now, and then you'll have your chance to go to the store, get the DVD, and have her sign it out in the lobby. So thank you very much for
coming.
Thank you.